Well, you have tuned in today to a very interesting show, one that never disappoints, particularly if you are interested in jewelry and all aspects of it. This is the Antique Vintager, and you might ask, what is an antique vintager? Well, first, let me say, my name is Ann Eller, and I am excited to be bringing you this podcast with my husband, Jeff Eller, the antique vintager. And what is a vintager? A vintager is someone who has studied all kinds of vintage things. In this case, Jeff has spent a lifetime learning all about anything that has to do with beauty and older things. So it is my great pleasure to introduce the man that has the brain that has accumulated enormous amounts of information. The vintager, Jeff Eller, my husband, is here with us. We're starting with the Victorian era. Jeff, what can you tell us about the Victorian era?
The Victorian era was probably the largest seismic shift in how jewelry was sold, designed, and desired that the world ever saw.
Well, what is Victorian jewelry named for?
Victorian jewelry is named for the period of Queen Victoria. And she came on board in the 1820s and lasted to the first part of the century. And she encompassed a nation that was known as an empire, not a nation, an empire. It was the British Empire. The statement that the sun never set on the British Empire was quite true. And that empire covered Middle East, it covered India, it covered islands in the Caribbean, it covered Africa.
A real wealth there, wasn't it?
Well, when she started out, she set a style. And she was able to set a style because magazines were just coming on stream. The idea of a fashion magazine was now available to anybody. They said that in their time that the average magazine was read by 130 different people.
One magazine?
One magazine.
Wow.
That's how much influence one magazine would have. And the printers had developed the steam presses, which enabled them to turn out literally thousands of magazines. One interesting thing is we have some colorized prints on the wall upstairs. Mm-hmm. They came out of magazines.
Oh, they used to do that, right? Yeah.
People sat there and colorized the pictures in magazines.
And today, we're back to coloring again.
Yeah. Now, for jewelry, she looked for her own inspiration. She broke from the traditional. She went for inspirational objects and designs that nobody had seen before on the scale that she went for to show the British wealth and also the taste. And her wedding band was a snake. And the idea behind the snake is, of course, the immortality. It never stops. It never begins. It never ends.
May the circle be unbroken.
Yeah, that was pretty much it.
Yeah. And but the snake, what did the snake have to do with that unbrokenness or immortality?
Well, it just renews itself. It sheds its skin. It renews itself. And the concept there was that their marriage would renew itself and stay with it, be perfect and last forever. And Albert actually had his own ring that's very much the same, except it had two snakes.
And that design is still popular today.
Still popular today. Yeah. And we can thank Queen Victoria for that design.
Yeah.
Her earrings, she used drop earrings, which were already previously popular. Mm-hmm. They were with fine gold interwoven with animalistic depictions of birds, of snakes.
Deer.
Mm-hmm. Turtles.
Swallows.
All the things that you see on jewelry nowadays, she had depicted in her time. But jewelry always had an effect on the world. One of the earliest graves of Neanderthals, which was about 90,000 years old, they found that they had seashells strung on a leather cord. And it came all the way up to the day.
So jewelry always has been something that
always
has desired.
Been something that human beings use as an accoutrement to show status or to show beauty. Now, Victoria carried it one step further. She was also a merchandiser. She gave royal license to jewelry manufacturers.
Back in the 1800s, folks.
Yeah, she was way ahead of the Kardashians or the Trumps or any of the rest of them of today. She licensed gloves to the glove manufacturer. She licensed jewelry to Gerard's and Ashley's and Newbury, different ones. She played them against each other to where they had to come up with new and exciting designs to be the jeweler to the queen. That meant something.
Absolutely.
And Albert did the same thing with clothes on Bond Street. He made Bond Street famous as a place where you buy your suits at.
It was an exciting time for them. They were getting wealthy. England was becoming, the empire was becoming bigger. They were figuring out how to use all the products that they were there and making the established people in England more wealthy.
You're absolutely right. They had come out of the Napoleonic Wars broke. And within 20 years, it was the most popular and most prosperous empire the world had ever seen. Hmm. Yeah. Now, Albert was known for tobacco distribution.
Yes,
he
Prince
lent his
Albert.
Name to it. But he also was known for riding equipment. And Victoria had her own licensed riding equipment, saddles and bridles and whatever for herself.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
But that was when she was young.
That was when she was young.
Yes.
Now, when Albert died in the 1860s, mourning jewelry.
And she had a long time that she remained queen after he died.
Absolutely. But the mourning jewelry, as her regimen, never went away. After he died, mourning jewelry was what she wore. The onyx, the jet, the theme of the swallows,
all come out of
mourning jewelry.
Seed pearls.
And seed pearls have an interesting thing. You know where they imported the seed pearls from?
No, Mr. Vintager, but I'll bet you're going to tell us.
How about the Tennessee River here in the United States?
Well, I thought we weren't dealing with them after we'd gotten our freedom.
We never stopped dealing with them. It was English, and more English.
Oh, okay. So we sold them the pearls, the seed pearls.
We sold them the seed pearls. Hmm. They put up the money to develop the seed pearl beds.
How about that?
What person in the United States made seed pearl jewelry absolutely famous? Mary Todd Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln's wife.
There you go.
And she branded it, and it was also in the magazines.
Now, and she was in mourning for a long time, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Sorry, I just happened to make the comparison. You know, Queen Victoria wore all the black stuff and everything, and Mary wore all the black stuff and everything. Yeah.
All right, what piece of jewelry is almost in every jewelry store that you'd ever find? And we have always several of them in our antique case.
Is that a hint?
Huh?
Is that a hint?
Yeah.
Would it be a black onyx ring?
A black onyx ring. Black onyx rings became de rigueur after Queen Victoria started wearing them.
Did she take off her wedding band? I mean, I'm just curious.
Never took it off.
Never took it off. Okay.
Never took it off. But she wore the black onyx ring as a reminder and a remembrance. And that was one of the gifts that she gave out to her handmaidens. And by the way, she also learned the idea of merchandising through the handmaiden things. The queen always had handmaidens. Well, she rotated them.
Okay.
It becomes something you earned the right to be. You had to do something for the queen, for the crown, for your country to get to be a handmaiden.
Okay.
It's kind of like debutantes of today.
Wow.
Yeah. You could buy your way into being a handmaiden.
You could buy your way into good favor.
Yeah.
There you go.
Now, she still influenced jewelry right up to the end. The resurgence of the cameo was primarily due to Victorian era.
And did she have cameo, like a cameo of Prince Albert?
She had Albert and her sitting on a sofa cameo carved.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. That was a rather large cameo.
Now, just out of curiosity, did she continue to wear her fine jewelry that she had gotten, or did it all get gone to the museum and she just wore her mourning jewelry?
All of it went to the tower.
To the tower.
The concept of the British crown jewels being held in the tower happened at this time.
Okay.
And she wore her mourning jewelry for the rest of her life after Albert passed.
And is that where the lock of hair came from, putting it in
hair? Hair jewelry came into being at that time. One of the little asides was that the funeral homes sold the jewelry for your hair jewelry. They would take a lock from your dead individual. And,
well, those British, aren't they kind of tricky there? They figured out a way to merchandise everything.
They did. And they made it to where you had to have a license to do it. They're those, one of the first ones to do that.
That's where they had all the apprentice programs.
That's why they had all the apprentice programs.
Sure.
Apprentice programs weren't to add to the populace of undertakers, chimney sweeps. Didn't matter what service industry it was. Wasn't to add to it. It was to make sure that it stayed in the family.
Interesting.
It became a job you could hand down.
So Queen Victoria wore mourning jewelry.
Right
up to the time that she died. Was there any significant pieces? Did she wear pearls anymore, or did she put her pearls up too?
Her pearls went up too, except for state visits. Now, she wore pearls for state visits, and she carried a mace with a Kohinoor diamond in it for state visits, because during Victoria's time, you had the rubies from Burma. You had the sapphires and rubies and from India. But India at that time included everything all the way up to Thailand.
Right.
Now, South Africa provided gold by the tonnage. And the English controlled it. And it also provided diamonds.
No wonder they wanted to keep South Africa under their control.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It was a legacy. I mean, long as every diamond that was sold, every piece of gold that was minted had the British stamp to it, had the British recognition of where it was, how it was done, who cut it, the concept of the cutting was developed actually in either Oberstein, Germany, but the English were diamond centers also at the time.
Now, we never think about England as a diamond center. We think of Amsterdam. We think of other areas, but we never think of England for that.
It was, and people don't realize it. And actually, the Germans cut more diamonds than the Dutch ever thought about or the Belgians ever thought about.
Now, did they cut diamonds? This is a little off the subject, but did they actually cut the diamonds in South Africa, or was the rough sent to England?
The rough was sent to England. England took a percentage. They took a percentage of the raw stone, then they took a percentage of the finished goods. It was a license.
A license.
Right.
So when, as Queen Victoria aged and when she died, what happened? What happened with her mourning jewelry?
Actually, a good deal of it went to the Tower of London.
Okay.
I mean, and some of it stayed within the royal family and was passed down to individuals, aunts, uncles, relatives within the family itself, the extended family. She gave away a lot of jewelry during her lifetime.
And she never found love again.
She never found love again officially.
Oh, do tell. That sounds interesting.
Well, one of the things that she gave was a watch to Mr. Brown, who was her consort for the last 30 years of her life.
Okay. And a consort is a very close friend?
Very close friend. Probably nowadays would be called a friend with benefits.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Now we move to her son, Edward. Mm-hmm. Edward waited 70 years.
He was 70 when he ascended
to the... 60-something when she passed.
And he said, thanks, Mom.
Well, Philip will be 60-something when...
If he does.
If he does, yeah. Right. Well, she could live to be 100. He'll never make it.
Right.
But... Edward's style was entirely different than his mother.
And it was called Edwardian.
Edwardian. And Edwardian was the fact that platinum had learned to be a useful metal. They had figured out how to smelt it and turn it into a hardened metal.
And you could do very delicate work that you can't. And it will hold up as opposed to what you can do with gold.
Well, platinum was known as a metal that lasts.
Yes.
The downside of platinum was it was a perfect conductor of electricity. You could use it to ignite gunpowder. Therefore, platinum was seized during the First World War to use as fuse material.
So the era of the use of platinum as the first time really being used was really very short.
Very short.
He came to the throne, what, in 1904, 1905?
Right. And by 1915, it was a strategic item. But the style of jewelry, the filigree idea, the light, the airiness, to show off the gemstone, which was primarily diamonds, because by this time the diamond pipeline out of Africa was wide open, was a established style again, and his wife was kind of like the Trump woman today. She was a drop-dead gorgeous model.
Even though she was she younger or was she?
Oh, much.
She was much younger.
Yes.
Okay. And so the light airiness of the jewelry matched her style.
Matched her style.
Right. And after such a depressive time with Queen Victoria, probably the people were ready for something different.
And they were ready for the brightness, the lightness, whereas the concept of using onyx and everything, that was pretty much gone.
Right. And the delicate work and the openness to be able to allow the light to come through it. Actually, I think Edwardian is one of the most beautiful styles of jewelry because it is so fine. You see the old bar pins with all that delicate work and rings.
Well, one of the things that you see is any of these big platinum pins took its inspiration usually from the Edwardian times, even if they were made in the 30s, they still took their inspiration from that time. And the concept of garland and the concept of bows, all Edwardian.
Cartier actually made a name for himself with the bow and the garlands.
That's true.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And even today, Girard was very famous for the garland.
Absolutely.
And so it was a strong fashion thing that came to the United States a little later than it came to the rest of the world. But the fashion of the time became so strong that the concept of filigree, even after it wasn't an imperative to have, held in for the next 30 years.
And today, filigree is very much desired. We have a hard time finding. In fact, most of the pieces that have stood the test of time are platinum.
Right.
The white gold ones have disintegrated, for lack of a better way to say it.
Well, if you wear gold, it wears.
Yes.
White gold came into effect in 1919. That didn't really get going into the 1920s. Prior to that, they had to use platinum or they used silver encapsulated with yellow gold. Yellow gold would be the backing, the silver would be the front to give it that white metal look.
And the platinum gives it a much whiter look than
it was perfect for diamonds.
Yes.
It enhanced the whiteness of diamonds. It showed them off in the best possible way. So it was the most popular object.
And that period dealt with flowers and life, I guess
right.
We could say.
Yes.
Yeah.
We were working with new things, new supplies, new designs. We were becoming modern. After World War II, the whole landscape changed. Mm-hmm. The dowdiness of Europe changed into the lightness of promise. The same way in England, same way here.
Wow.
Became very, quote, progressive. Women voted. Liquor was repealed. We had prohibition. We had some things that were absolutely stupid on the face of themselves that just defied logic, but we also had fashion.
You know, I think that's the one thing that we don't always look at. We try to look at jewelry as a category by itself. We don't look at the fashion and all the other things that are going on in the world that affect why things are the way they are. Everything is kind of tied in, which is why I think it's so neat as the vintager that you're able to bring all these things together. I really think that with the Victorian and the Edwardian, we need to hold off on some of the other because we just add so much more to it than just the jewelry.
Oh, yes. The Edwardian era was pretty much didn't last into the 20s, but the fact of how they were making jewelry, they were making jewelry in an industrial way in Newark, New Jersey by this time. Newark, New Jersey was one time the jewelry center of the United States.
It's hard to believe, but it's true. We have catalogs from that time. In fact, I think a lot of people would probably be very interested to know that a lot of the knowledge and everything that you get is through looking through old catalogs.
Oh, old catalogs were the center of where it was happening. Newark, New Jersey, and Rhode Island. Rhode Island was producing the costume jewelry, the high-end costume jewelry, and Newark was producing fine jewelry.
That's right. And the catalogs, I mean, I think we ought to probably wind this one up, but the catalog, Sears catalog, is and Montgomery Ward's. These catalogs showed you life.
Right. They showed the progression of how things happened. And we have the jewelry manufacturing catalogs of themselves. People don't realize where the jewelry centers were here in the United States. They automatically assume it was New York City. Well, it was New York, okay, but it was mostly manufactured in Newark. In the same way that they don't realize that after World War II, one of the jewelry centers was Cincinnati.
That's true.
You had five major jewelry manufacturers right there in Cincinnati.
So those are just some of the type of topics that we are going to be covering in these podcasts. The Victorian is what we covered today, the Edwardian with the platinum, the lightness and airiness of it, the Victorian with its darker side. What most of us think of is that mourning jewelry. What we found out, there's a lot more to it.
Oh, there was a tremendous amount to it. Style became something that people sought after.
And we're still doing that today.
Still doing it today. And we still license things today.
And
people license things and take a percentage today. Same thing that Victoria set up 150 to almost 200 years ago.
And who would have thought that little old Queen Victoria started all this?
Everybody thought they could run over the top of her. Nobody ran over her.
I think that's a good thing. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast with us here today, The Antique Vintager, my husband, Jeff Eller. Thanks for filling us in today, Jeff, on all the good things that are out there in history. For people that think history is blah, all you got to do is tune in to The Vintager and learn more about jewelry. Thanks for doing this, Jeff.
I enjoyed it.
And we'll
go over Art Nouveau next.
I think so. We just covered so much. So if you'd like to check out more about the Antique Vintager, check out theantiquevintager.weebly.com. And if you've got a question for him, you can even leave a question right there on the website. And who knows, might be the question we answer on a podcast, or he'll answer you in person. So, and don't forget, we'll be doing blog posts at theantiquevintager.weebly.com. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Bye-bye.